Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Brett Beer does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, is it great to be back with you? No Matt Serra this week, folks. It's Monday, May 17th, 2021, episode 301 of the Anik and Florian podcast. John Anik and Ray Longo off the top today because I think Ken Flo's wife is in labor as we speak.
Right.
I wanted to be on the air when she actually gave birth to this little human being. So the best to Clark Florian and Kenny Florian as their lives are about to effectively change forever here in a matter of moments.
Yeah, best of luck, guys. He wouldn't let the podcast go in.
He went dark on us, so he said he might miss the show today, and then he went dark. So I'm assuming that's because things are starting to escalate, as they say. I believe her water broke this morning, and they are ready to go. So Kenny has a daughter, True, and they are welcoming a baby boy. Not breaking news if you follow the guy on Twitter. I'm not trying to steal his thunder, but
nice.
We're excited to see what this boy will be named. And of course, Ken Flo celebrating a big birthday here in about 9 days, but in all likelihood, he will not be with us today, but that's okay because you know who stepped up to the goddamn plate? Raymond Peter Longo.
You know what this is like in the movies when they got to wake the old judge up to sign like a search warrant. I come out in my pajamas. This is what I feel like, but I got my trusty Led Zeppelin mug. That's I'm ready good. To go.
Longo is a notary public, by the way. If anybody needs that, you can just show up at Longo Wadman MMA today. So, Matt Serra's appearance last week, polarizing individual. No, he's very beloved in the MMA space, but the dynamic between the two of you guys gets me off my game.
He fucked this on purpose. Now, he could have been home and did that. Nah, he had to go in the car. Then we had to look at him like this. Hey, people, how would you like to see this for like 20 seconds?
I mean, this is
what we saw. Like, a guy kept freezing. Horrible.
Different locations. Wow. Well, I will say, though, we were trying to work around his schedule, which includes this mid-morning nap. So he teaches very early on or whatever the hell he does.
And then
he said as late as you can do it. And I said 12:30 p.m. Eastern is about as late as we can go. So we wanted to answer the bell for the 300th episode. But that is neither here nor there. Let's get into headlines and let us begin with UFC 262. What a wild live event, huh? I mean, this sport.
I thought every fight on that card was good. from top to bottom. They had great fights. They're one of the best cards I remember.
So Charles Oliveira is the undisputed UFC lightweight champion. And I think anybody who watched the broadcast and ingested our content this week, UFC 262 Countdown, they understand what type of accomplishment this is for it to take a guy 28 UFC fights to just get a championship opportunity. And there were plenty of times in Charles Oliveira's career when people sort of dismissed his chances to rise to that peak. You know, after the main event against Max Holloway that I've referenced in 2015 that ended unceremoniously with an injury about 90 seconds in, and people have perpetually questioned his toughness, at times deservedly so. Charles Oliveira is on top of the MMA world, and man-to-man, I just couldn't be happier for this individual and his family.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Charles Oliveira now is the descent, never quit. He just kept going. And I'm going to give you a bit of trivia. I said this the other night to somebody. It was about 12, 13 years ago. He actually fought in the Ring of Combat, and he fought a really tough guy from Long Island. I think his name was Dom Stanko. And
that's a fighter name, huh?
I mean, tough street kid. And he got dismantled. I mean, this guy, whoever he was, you know, there was a place in Florida called the Armory, maybe. I could be totally wrong, but there was a guy he brought in Edson Barboza, two guys that when you saw them fight, you said, these guys are going to do something. I don't know if I said he's going to be a champion someday, but man, he was totally different. It was about 12 years ago. So his journey started in those, you know, those little shows and ended up culminating in a big victory, which is crazy because he did have highs and lows, you know, and he's got a bunch of losses on his record. And, you know, I thought the difference in this fight, you know, I thought Chandler had a shot to do what Felder did to him, kind of just break him with like physicality.
Right.
And it almost looked like it was going to happen, and it didn't. So Oliveira, man, hats off, man. He stayed the course. His technique is beautiful. You know, even when he got hurt, he was still able to start throwing up submissions, whether he was close or not, is one thing. But he has a presence of mind to fight. Looked like maybe it could have been stopped, but thank God it wasn't. But, right. You know, who's not a Michael Chandler fan? It was a crazy thing because Chandler is such an uplifting guy. And if anybody can handle a loss, it's Chandler. He goes into that category where those losses don't bother him. He's not going to harp on it. He's going to find the silver lining in that loss, and he will be back.
There are a lot of different angles to this fight that we will get to. I'm not sure how much time Ray Longo has this morning. But in terms of Michael Chandler and his fight IQ, his strategy in this fight, I do believe in terms of one punch knockout power, he's got to be the most powerful guy at 155 pounds. I would throw Justin Gaethje in that mix. Charles Oliveira, we talk a lot about the technique. Maybe we don't talk enough about the power that he has on the feet. But Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier, and I all at different times in that first round questioned Chandler's decision on the broadcast to engage Charles on the ground instead of allowing him back to his feet when he had him hurt. So I will turn it around on the coach and ask you if you fault Michael Chandler's decision to continuously engage inside that closed guard of Charles Oliveira, seemingly maybe trying to finish him with ground strikes. You know, I thought he should have stood him up at least twice in that round when he was hurt to try to close the show.
Yeah, well, look, it's he had success with Hooker, right? It never got to the guard, obviously, but he did. But basically, it was the same kind of thing. The guy was on all fours. He was getting punched in the head. Look, if you ever heard me coaching, I'm always the guy saying stand back up, because I love to get a guy up and those legs are wobbling a little bit.
You
get one or two free shots. You know what I mean? It was almost, you know, but even like Matt and GSP, you know, he had that guy wobbled. He could have went to the floor. Matt's a jiu-jitsu guy. Maybe he should have went down and submitted him. No, he kept lining him up, man, for big shots while he was wobbling. And that was probably a mistake in hindsight, but it's worked for him before. So, you know, maybe he'll learn. That's what I'm saying. He'll learn something from that. But if you have the power of Michael Chandler, get that guy back on his feet.
That's my thought. And it's not hindsight for us because we mentioned it right while the fight was going on. I guess I'm wondering aloud if strategically that was something that they were planning to do or if that was just instinctual.
I think it was instinctual what he did. But, you know, in hindsight, and again, for me, I'm always – yelling to get back up, especially when I know I have a striker.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a guy that wrestles, I'm not doing that. You know, but Chandler has huge power. There was a fight, man. Me and Al were cornering Costa Filippo, and I forget who he was fighting, but he knocked the guy down. He was on top of him. Me and Al are screaming, get up. I mean, it took, John, it took 20 screams, right? And he was when he let that guy up, man, that guy stood up and he got hit with two shots, took him completely out. So I think that's where you're coming from. I agree with that.
Michael Chandler, a lot more coachable, incidentally, than Costa Filippo. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. The mental fortitude, though, the mental focus of Charles Oliveira in this instinct, when he was hurt, the way he rolled urgently to make sure that this fight was not finished, I give him a lot of credit for that. And I was talking to the fine MMA manager, Jason House, and Eric, your boy, Anders, before the fight. And Jason House made me want to almost go back to my hotel room and rewrite my show open, because he was talking about Chandler as a foil for Charles Oliveira and saying, how perfect would it be if Charles Oliveira can beat this guy? Because this is the type of challenge that you would really like to see him pass to become the UFC champion. Maybe a Felder type challenge a little bit if the fight goes to the ground and gets hairy as it did, right? But you want to see him be the nail, right? Not be the hammer necessarily, but be the nail, recover, lean on his heart and mental and physical toughness and still get the job done. So I think it was a perfect championship win. What a way to win a title. And as I said to someone after the fact, you know, Michael Chandler's a dear friend of mine. I have a closer personal relationship with him, even though I go way back with Charles, in some part just because Charles Oliveira doesn't really speak English. But, you know, Chandler's already a millionaire. Charles Oliveira has effectively changed his life forever and is going to be able to help his family and a lot of different people with this money and with this new championship contract. So I am just so happy, man. So, so happy for Charles Oliveira. And you know, hopefully he's feeling that love from the fan base right now.
And John, the fights that really get you jumping out of your seat are where one guy's winning, then he's losing, then he's winning again. You know, when he had Chandler in the body lock, when he had his back, I mean, I thought Chandler did a great job defending that. And that's another reason why, like, to your point, where when he knocked him down, why even take the chance of getting back into a position like that? That's uncomfortable. And, you know, thank God he made it out of there. But just what a great back and forth fight. Great storylines on both sides. It was just, I thought it was a fantastic main event.
I was listening to Tyron Woodley on the ESPN Plus UFC 262 post show, and he talked about Charles Oliveira's ability to keep Michael Chandler on the end of his punches, and specifically the accuracy down the stretch. When you have Chandler on the ropes, and he was pretty damn hurt. You know, Cody was saying to me in Houston, I actually got to meet Cody Merrow this weekend, our producer, for the first time. It was his 28th birthday. Yeah.
Wow.
What a great dude. He's not 6'3", but he's a great dude. I'm just kidding.
I don't even know what that means, but it's funny.
No. So I lost my train of thought there for a second. But keeping somebody on the end of your punches, you have a window in which to finish somebody. And Charles Oliveira made sure that Michael Chandler didn't recover. And you see a lot of these guys are just so accurate in these type of situations. And I would actually put Chandler Hooker in this conversation as well. He did not miss with those finishing strikes, and Charles Oliveira, man, did he not miss, and made sure that he left no doubt that Chandler was unconscious.
Absolutely beautiful. All right. Really great fight.
So John, there he is. So the point that you got ran off track of that I was making to you was that at no point did Chandler think to shoot when Charles hurt him.
Yes.
Which is crazy thinking, because Chandler is an excellent wrestler, and at no point in his brain did he think to shoot when he was hurt.
Thank you, Cody. That's right.
That's a great point.
So he was clearly compromised to a significant extent. All right. So there's so much to get into when it comes to this fight. I don't want to bring the program down with this morass of negativity right now, but we do have to talk about the scorecards a little bit, because even though it mattered not at night's end because there was a finish, two of the three judges involved gave gave Michael Chandler a 10-8 in round one, despite the fact that Charles Oliveira had some moments. So the way I interpret the scoring, I thought that was a 10-9. I thought it was maybe inching towards a 10-8, but based upon my interpretation of the scoring, which I am going to read for you today, I apologize if people don't want to hear that. But before I get into sort of the nitty-gritty of the language, Sal D'Amato and Chris Lee are sort of ubiquitously regarded as fine judges. And, well, I'll preface it by saying if my bosses, Craig Borsari and Zach Candido, don't like me to talk about judges individually, I'm sure I'll get a phone call from Zach after this program. I think Sal D'Amato is one of the best judges in the game. I do not hold Chris Lee in that regard. I haven't fancied a lot of his scorecards over the last 2 years. But both of those guys had a 10-8. And these are widely regarded as two of the most elite judges in the business. And I just did not see this as a 10-8. And I'll get into the language here in a little bit after I get Ray's opinion. And maybe I should have done this in reverse order. But I don't know. I feel like some of these judges are in their head a little bit at this point in time. And, you know, with this motivation to be more liberal with the 10-8s, I didn't see a 10-8 there in round one. Your thoughts, Raymond?
Yeah, I wouldn't have scored that a 10-8 only because he was threatening with the submissions on the floor. So I think that evens out the big moment that he had. And Oliveira did survive. It wasn't like he was – he didn't look like he was out. So, yeah, that's – I mean, look, bad dude. Don't get me going with the judging thing, man. I just – It's a real simple solution, John. I'm telling you, any job in this country that you can't do, there's a good chance you get fired. I mean, I don't know. They have to, but in all honesty, they have to open up these judges so we could talk to them and just tell me what you saw.
Right.
Just why? Because without that, it's not even any type of due process. It's just, I don't know why they protect these guys. I don't know. Judges and referees. I mean, they are protected. You are not piercing that armor that protects these guys. But it's you have to at least let them talk and just tell us what they're thinking. Or they should be answering to the commission, that you know, the head. And then he's got to make the decision. Dude, you're going back to the minors. That's unacceptable. Why would you think it was that when it's clearly looking like, you know, something?
Yeah.
But I've been through this 100 times, man. You see, my problem always – I mean, I don't even want to get into that, but let's not go down that rabbit hole. But, you know, there's judges that are in there for the wrong reason too. And, you know, like I had a beef with a guy, and he purposely just – he's going to fuck you, man. There's no question about it. You can't have the guy judging your fights. And for the championship fights, I don't know, you get to pick the referee, I think, but not the – the judges, but it's sad, man, because people, they're losing half their pay. But I think this night, the right winners won, right, John? We agree on that?
Yes, there was a couple of weird. I'm not done on this, unfortunately. Yeah, I went down a rabbit hole yesterday.
I'll go off the rails.
I mean, Charles Oliveira starts the first round, landing the good, clean, low kicks. He does get Chandler's back at one point, goes to the figure four. Eventually, huge moments for Chandler on the feet, swings the pendulum of the round, but in my mind, not enough to swing it from 10-9 Oliveira early to all the way 10-8 Chandler late. I am going to read now.
Yeah, and John,
go ahead.
A 10-8 should be a pretty substantial beating from bell to bell, or you know, 4 minutes of control time landing some damage. Go ahead. All
right. I'm going to read what constitutes a 10-9 round from the MMA scoring. And I would encourage anyone to check out Sean Sheehan's video as well when it comes to scoring. He's devoted a lot of time to this initiative. Don't even get me started on the 10-10s, which essentially don't even fucking exist based upon this weird language. A 10-9 round in MMA is where one combatant wins the round by a close margin. So let us at least start with that thesis statement, that 10-9 rounds, generally speaking, should be reserved for close rounds. At least rounds in which guys have moments on both sides. I know Ray's already curling an eyebrow on
me.
I'm going to stop interrupting the rules at this point in time. Sorry.
No.
A 10-9 round in MMA is where one combatant wins the round by a close margin. A 10-9 round in MMA is the most common score a judge assesses during the night. If during the round the judge sees a fighter land the better strikes or utilize effective grappling during the competition, even if just by one technique over their opponent, the judge shall give the winning fighter a score of 10 while assessing the losing fighter a score of 9 or less. It is imperative that judges understand the score of 9 is not an automatic numerical score given to the losing fighter of the round. The judge must consider, was the fighter engaged in offensive actions during the round? Did the losing fighter compete with an attitude of attempting to win the fight or just to survive the offensive actions of their opponent? A score of 10-9 can reflect an extremely close round or a round of marginal domination and or impact. And therein lies the problem. right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have half points. We don't have a lot of options, right? So I'm all for half points. I'm all for open scoring. But a score of 10-9 can reflect an extremely close round or a round of marginal domination and or impact, right? So 10-9s are way too fucking vague. All right. A 10-8 round. This language is a little bit longer. A 10-8 round in MMA is where one fighter wins the round by a large margin. A 10-8 round in MMA, not the most common score a judge will render, but it is absolutely essential to the evolution of the sport and the fairness to the fighters that the judges understand and effectively utilize a score of 10-8. I'm trying to read this quickly.
Yeah.
A score of 10-8 does not require a fighter to dominate their opponent for 5 minutes of a round. And that is a line that I think a lot of judges hang on, right?
See, yeah, that's crazy because it started out almost the complete opposite. What was the way it started out when you read that?
A 10-8 round in MMA is where one fighter wins the round by a large margin. But then, right.
Yeah, then go right, to the last line.
A score of 10-8 does not require a fighter to dominate their opponent for 5 minutes.
That's whatever.
So, and again, respect to the judges. I think you have the hardest job in the sport.
Right.
Other than fighting. Fighting, hardest job. Coaching and commentating, incidentally, are way down the list, right? Those aren't
very good.
But again, so that's the line that I always come back to. And people are like, what does that even mean? And I'm saying, hey, don't shoot the goddamn messenger. It's in the rules right here. And I think for even the most seasoned of judges, stop barking. Even for the most seasoned of judges, I think they're sitting on that line and saying, hey, man, you know, he dominated that round. I'm not talking about Charles Oliveira, but I'm saying, or Michael Chandler, I'm saying, a fighter dominated that round, not necessarily for the full 5 minutes, but I'm trying to be more liberal with this 10-8 to differentiate from 10-9s, which really should be reserved, in my opinion, for closer rounds. Let me just continue.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry if this is boring anybody. By the way, we did push Forrest Griffin to next week because Ken Flo is at a North Carolina hospital about to become a father for the second time. Stop barking, please. All right.
Oh, wow. You got good ears, man.
Judges shall always, and always in all is in all caps. Like, do we really go all caps in the official rules? Judges shall always give a score of 10-8 when the judge has established that one fighter has dominated the action of the round, had duration of the domination, and also impacted their opponent with either effective strikes or effective grappling maneuvers that have diminished the abilities of their opponent. Judges must, all caps, consider giving the score of 10-8 when a fighter shows dominance in the round, even though no impactful scoring against the opponent was achieved. I'm done. Okay. I decided I'm going to stop there because impactful is a made up word. Something either has impact or it doesn't. I know it's in the dictionary now because it's like a cute word that is totally overused and misused in sports television. But yeah, I saw impactful in the rules. I'm done. I'm done with that exercise for today. Okay. I love you, Zach. Don't get me in trouble. But you know what I mean? It's like, what? So here I am on a headset, 8 hours, 25, 26 weekends a year. And I'm doing my best to get to the bottom of this and try to understand this, to impart information on an audience of millions of people around the world. And the language just doesn't make it any easier, man. I know it was rewritten in 2017. I'm still confused.
Yeah, look, I'm going back to my original. Just talk to these guys. I think that'll give you a better indication than any rules. I'm telling you, because you might, you know, John, it's like you talk to a guy and you go, holy shit, he's fucking batshit crazy. Like, this is the reason. You know what I'm saying? But if you don't speak with him, or if it's, you know, and it's got to be, you know, off the cuff, it can't be scripted and all that bullshit. You know what I mean? Which is what they like to do. But, yeah, you have to speak with them, and I guarantee you, once you speak with them, you'll get a better idea. Look, you know, John McCarthy, he's always a good guy to bounce off of because when he, at least he explains things. I'm not saying whether I agree with him or I disagree with him, he will give you a great explanation.
Yeah, we've been texting back and forth.
It really will help clear things up. Now, you might agree with it, you might not, but he's at least willing to talk to you and tell you, this is what I thought, this is why I thought it. And I think for the most part, he normally does a pretty good job.
Well, most of these judges and referees are vehemently discouraged from speaking publicly. And I think when their profile maybe gets high enough, like a Mark Goddard or a Herb Dean, they're okay to maybe take some liberties. But I do agree with your thesis statement on this, which is that judges should be accountable. And I'll also say, when I called Ray before the show and let him know that we were going to go down this path a little bit today, you know, you did say it's kind of like pissing up a tree. And when we have these conversations,
we get nowhere, John. We get absolutely nowhere. And it's just, I'd rather, you know, at this point, I'd rather just save my energy for something else. It's not nothing works. And I'm not that hell bent on it. You know what I'm saying? But I think it's an easy solution. You go back to the minors. Somebody's over, you know, you have a boss.
Right.
You didn't do your job. You get promoted. We'll give you time to come back up. Yeah. Shadow this guy for a good do something.
I mean, just with respect, Chris Lee scored Paul Felder over Rafael Dos Anjos. So my 9-year-old daughter, Riley, had it 4-1 for RDA. And I took a deep breath thereafter. I was like, all right, I'm not.
Did we ever get an explanation as to why he judged that fight?
I don't even want to talk about it. You know,
Did Felder send him a Christmas present?
I do plan, though, because Sal D'Amato is a nice guy. I do plan to seek him out and have a cup of coffee with him and express some of my opinions. And
I believe he'll speak with you.
He'll sit down with me. Yeah, no, he's a good dude. And I think he's a damn fine judge as well and has a really difficult job. Yeah, all right, let's talk some fighting.
There's a couple of guys that'll sit down with you. And once your ass hits that seat, you'll be looking for the fucking exit door as quick as possible. Yeah. Trust me on that. You'll be running. You won't even believe what you hear.
All right.
I'll tell you, but just on a quick note, I remember, I think it was like 3 weeks ago, McCarthy and Morrow were calling a fight, and they had to score. You know, it was an easy fight to score, and there was one guy, the complete opposite, and that's the first time I heard McCarthy kind of lose his mind. He's like, holy, there's nothing ever done, and it's the same guys. Now, granted, he wouldn't reveal the guy's name, which we could all guess, but
it's all out there. Yeah,
it's all out there. Everybody knows who the knuckleheads are at this point.
All right. Not a knucklehead, incidentally. Charles Do Bronx Oliveira out of the favelas in Brazil to an undisputed UFC lightweight championship, joining his countryman Rafael Dos Anjos, I believe, as the only Brazilian lightweight champions in UFC history. So who's next? So I texted Michael Chandler, and I know he's still sort of licking his wounds a little bit, but I wouldn't be totally opposed to an immediate rematch just given the nature of the way this first round went, but that is not going to be the direction in which the promotion proceeds. So in terms of title defense number one for Charles Oliveira, and by the way, Cody, I agree with you. Live crowd went from booing Oliveira in the walkout to cheering his win to a great extent because of the sheer craziness of the fight, but you're absolutely right about that. So who's next for Charles Oliveira? Who do you think it'll be? The winner of Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor? You do have Justin Gaethje lurking if maybe you wanted to turn Charles around quickly, but he did absorb some borderline concussive damage in this contest. Dom would tell you it wasn't a concussion at all. But what do you think about the immediate future and title defense number one for Do Bronx?
Look, I think the good news is there's probably four or five. I think any fight is great. You know, that's the good news. That division right now, with those guys, I would like to see any fight. I mean, Gaethje, there's a term in the mob. He gets shelved. What they do? They shelved Gaethje? Or we don't even see him anymore.
I don't know.
Where is he? You know what I mean?
He's been looking for a fight.
Yeah,
I'll leave it at that.
Right. So, I mean, look, the right guy, if he wasn't fighting, would be Dustin, right? Because he's the guy. He's really the guy that should be fighting for the title.
Yeah.
But now he's got to get past McGregor. And I think the winner of that fight will probably be the next fight for Oliveira. But there's any fight they make, I think, is good. Gaethje would be great. There's nothing wrong with that. And the other thing with not putting Chandler in for the rematch, there's a million good fights for Chandler. You know, it's going to be that division is great. And I think I think if you lined up a right side and a left side, you could zigzag any way you want. Every fight is going to be good. So,
Beneil Dariush is going to be in the mix. He got his seventh consecutive win in the co-main event against Tony Ferguson, 30-27 times three. So Tony Ferguson goes from winning 12 in a row to now losing three consecutive fights. Otherworldly toughness. It's great to see everybody embrace Tony to this extent. I know as I was talking to my boss, Zach Candido, after the fights, he was sort of saying out loud, you know, it's kind of too bad that now that Tony is so appreciated, it's at a time in his career where maybe he's having a hard time competing with the elite lightweights. Beneil Dariush is certainly that after this statement win. What were your thoughts on the co-main event?
Man, great fight. Benil's an absolute great guy. If you've ever got to talk to him, he's just a great guy. I'm glad to see that, you know, the success he's having. But yeah, just total domination against a guy that, you know, we talked about a year and a half, 2 years ago of possibly beating, you know, Khabib, which in hindsight now doesn't make a good argument, but it is hindsight. Great, great win for Benil. He deserves a huge fight, at least a title eliminator. He's another guy that's had his ups and downs, been around for a while. It's great to see him get the win. Ferguson, man, look, it's almost, to me, it's almost tragic, man, because look, hey, wait, before we even get started, Dean Thomas, let's give it up to him. I think he knocked it out of the park.
Stud.
I mean,
what a stud.
He knocked it out of the park, but what he said is 100% right. He is a guy that got by on craziness and his unorthodox everything. And when you don't have the fundamentals, you are in it. You're when the shit hits the fan, you're going to get fucked. It's that simple. And that's exactly what we're seeing. This guy's, I mean, the fact that here's the problem I'm seeing. And I don't know, I like Tony, but he needs an intervention. Somebody needs to talk to him. And the fact that he thinks Freddie Roach is going to help him in, I don't care if it was 8 months, a year. Right, I mean, it takes a long time, man, for somebody to make an impact on you. I mean, and, you know, I love Freddie Roach as a coach, but this is looking at everything but where you should be looking, which is at yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's sad because, you know, the guy's got talent. But then when you think in hindsight, John, how many fights was he knocked down? He's rolling around. He got away with, you know, three or four fights where that fight could have been over. So I think we're seeing it finally catch up to him. Where he just can't pull it together anymore. But he's got to look at himself, John. These guys, he really needs one head guy that he listens to. Yeah. And that's, I think, his only chance at this point, because you keep picking up this guy, you know, like I remember one time I had a kickboxer come to me. I didn't even know him, but he had a fight in 6 weeks. So I let him train in the gym and I went to corner him. And I overhear somebody going like, man, I can't wait to see what a difference when he's been with Longo. And I'm like, 6 weeks, dude. I wanted to really grab him and go, dude, this guy is a year minimum away from any type of change. Like these little quick fixes, unless you're really squared away.
Right.
And, you know, it's just not going to work. I don't know what I was looking at with Tony. And he's got to come to the realization now that everything is wrong. I mean, he can't stop a takedown. I mean, and Benil's not a Division I, you know, outstanding wrestler in college. I mean, he's not losing. He's getting totally dominated. And I don't know. I feel bad for him because he should have had his shot a couple of years ago and never happened. And this guy's in a world of shit now.
Yeah, he does have a belt at home, but it is of the interim variety. Remarkably, never has competed for the undisputed UFC lightweight title. The speed's not there. Excuse me, the aggression doesn't seem to be there. I know he was neutralized for 11 minutes on the ground in this fight, but the look in his eyes is not the same.
No,
right?
He's confused.
He's like not there.
John, even when they were announcing the decision, I don't even think he clapped. He almost looked to me like, is there a possibility maybe I won? Like he's got to really, somebody's got to sit him down because he's a super talented guy that's, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was all fun, him hitting the Wing Chun dummy and doing things. And,
yeah.
You know, Rogan builds a narrative around he's doing crazy things, but I don't know, man. Who the hell knows?
Maybe he could have won. You never know. You never know on this night. Speaking of which. No, I mean, I thought Caitlin Chookagian might have won this contest against Viviane Adaugio, but when 30-27 is one of the scorecards, and I thought Adaugio had banked at least one, if not two rounds, it's just massively discouraging. But, you know, Caitlin is a problem. She gets stronger as the fight goes on. She had a dominant third round, and yeah, generally speaking, I like when the forward-moving, fresher fighter gets rewarded, but I don't know, man. I think a lot of us Octagon side thought that Viviane Adaugio had done enough to beat the American this night. Anything for me on that fight before we move to Barboza and Burgos?
Well, I mean, look, obviously Caitlin's a friend. So, but listen, she clearly won the third. I think Vivian clearly won the second.
Yeah.
So that's a no-brainer, right? So the first round was close, depending on who you give it to. But right. I think you guys had Vivian. I'll go either way. I'm not all. Yeah. I wouldn't argue it from like an outsider's perspective.
Right. Riley Anik, my 9-year-old daughter, 29-28 Araujo, which
yeah, no,
be the
no,
same
yeah.
scorecard as her father when we watched.
I'm going to say this. You go 29-28 Vivian, you go 29-28 Caitlin.
Right.
I'd have to go back and look at the first round. The other two rounds are easy to score, but so for yeah. some jackass to give, you know, Caitlin all the rounds after the second round, I think is pretty crazy.
And I consider Caitlin a friend as well, and I'm very happy for her. She kept a bullish schedule in 2020 and has dealt with a lot of different challenges in training because of COVID-19, right? She is somebody who is very transportation-based. She bounces around and trains in New York and travels a lot. And so she's been leaning on her husband, Kyle Sermonara, for the first time, and happy for Caitlin. All right, let's get to Edson Barboza and Shane Burgos. What's your out time today, Ray? When do you have to
go? No, I don't care. Keep
right.
going.
Whatever. I love it. All right. I fucking love you. All right. And when we get to the main event challenge, by the way, later today, the language is just going to be completely off the rails because I'm going to do it in a Boston accent for Robbie Font. So be forewarned. Edson Barboza over Shane Burgos by knockout in round three. $75,000 a piece for the fight of the night. Oh, my Lord, man.
Holy crow.
Bulletproof matchmaking. And needless to say, this one delivered.
I mean, I had Felder as the toughest guy I knew. I'm putting Shane Burgos up there. How the fuck is he taking those leg kicks like that? Spin back kicks to the solar plexus, to the liver, still walking forward. He got rocked a bunch of times in that fight. That kid is tough, and he's good. But Barboza, I mean, just... what a great fight. I don't know what to say. I mean, I've never seen a knockout like that in my life. You could see his brain really trying to keep him in there until it just said, dude, I gave you 5 seconds.
Right.
I'm turning the lights out. You know, that delay was insane to me. It's almost like you could take that combo, the left jab to the overhand right, and cut out the first 5 seconds or 6 seconds and just go to where he stumbles back. That's the way it should look. Not
right,
what we
right.
saw. We saw five right. or 6 seconds that was crazy. I've never seen that. And anybody out there who has a YouTube video of something remote.
I got it for you.
I'd love
Cub to Swanson over Charles Oliveira of all people. There's an example in UFC history. Charles Oliveira gets hit and his reaction is not quite as delayed as Shane Burgos's, but there's a delayed reaction. I actually think in this instance, what closed the deal for good for Shane was when he hit the turnbuckle, when he backed up that, because he was backing up and he had that seemed to have the ultimate effect. And then he was done from there. But no, I mean, this is hard for Shane because he was very discouraged by certain things in that Josh Emmett fight, namely that he didn't attack that leg of Emmett's that was already just mush enough and then just getting hit too much and obviously got hit way too much in this fight. This is not a recipe for career longevity,
right.
even just for long-term health and well-being in retirement. You know, so I do think Shane Burgos is going to have to ask himself some hard questions. I mean, hell of a chin, maybe the best chin in the sport. He has so many different skills that we haven't seen in the octagon, whether it's his wrestling or his grappling. I do believe, though, when you're fighting a guy in Edson Barboza, ultimately, like, you need a win. Like, you need to change levels at some point in time, right? Like, you need to mix it up.
Wouldn't it be nice if he would have just put in some wrestling just to keep Barboza back on his heels, which would have set up his striking even more just by, you know, going for it. You don't even have to get him. Just go for him, make him work, come back out to the center, do your thing. But this is not, like you said, it's not the recipe for longevity. I mean, he's already taken too much punishment as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, I'm hoping they get him checked out because I'm telling you, John, that was not a normal That was not a normal reaction. It really wasn't. You could kind of see what's going on, but man, I don't know. I just hope he's. I got to tell you, I just hope he's all right because he's a great fighter, man.
He's a great fighter. Great fighter. One of my favorites, and I think as you saw, an embedded Michael Chandler's favorite fighter, and. Yeah, they were going to do some sort of checking. UFC president Dana White went over to the stairs to, and I was reading Dana's lips, and he said, you're an absolute warrior, and then he was hoping he would go get checked out. So hopefully
good,
that
good,
did happen. And for Edson Barboza, there was a good article by E. Spencer Kite, I believe, on UFC.com about Edson Barboza. He made his acting debut several months ago, and he had to play some like arrogant fighter, and Edson is the furthest thing from that. And it was weird for him to have to be cocky and wear these robes, Masvidal style, that wouldn't be anything that he would put on. But what a guy, what a striker, one of the best strikers in UFC history. And what a body of work for Edson Barboza. He's another guy who's never competed for the undisputed title. He's been awfully close. But he said this was the most crucial fight of his career, because even though he's not the oldest guy in the world, maybe 33 years old, if Edson Barboza doesn't beat Shane Burgos, probably never fighting for the UFC featherweight title. So needed this win, got it with style points. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Edson Barboza eventually ascend and get a UFC title shot here at 45. So good on Edson.
He's another guy. It's been around long enough, John. You got to give him, you got to reward these guys because they go to war. But look, the leg, he comes out blazing leg kicks. Then just when you think he's going to kick, his boxing skills look really well. You know, so he mixed it up just enough to, I think, keep Shane, you know, off-centered a little bit or off-balance. But what a great performance. Just the whole night, every fight, I think, was good.
All right, we're going to get to a couple other of those fights. By the way, MMADecisions.com, I'm being told, had 7 scorecards for Caitlin Chookagian, 29-28, and then 10 for Viviani Adaujo, 29-28. Point being there, 17 decisions, I believe, from media members, if I'm not mistaken. And again, verdict MMA is the way to go, the aggregate, getting all these scorecards together, right? But the point is, 17 media scorecards submitted. 0 had 30-27. But yet, when you come to the scorecards that actually matter, somebody is taking a piss in round 2, you know? And then you had Mike Grundy versus Lando Venata. And I thought this was interesting because our executive producer, Cody Merrow, went to the fights and he kind of thought, watching it live, and I know he was not sober per se, but he thought Mike Grundy won the fight. Then he went back and watched it at home on mute, and he thought Lando Venata won the fight. So split decision here for Lando. But again, one judge had it 30-27 for Mike Grundy. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, listen, man. That was I'm going to say it was a competitive fight, but I had it 30-27, I believe, for Lando. I thought Lando looked fantastic. This guy, if he really concentrates on a game plan, I think he's going to be hard to beat, man. He's very talented. Just the way he even defended the takedowns, like effortlessly, the way he's, you know, he had great awareness. He was kind of one step ahead of the guy at all times, but a competitive fight. It really was. It was one of those fights, I think, that's way closer than a 30-27 seems. You know what I mean? But I think you got to give those rounds to Lando. He definitely.
I agree.
There's no question in my mind.
I really want to see him now against somebody in that top 15. And I thought he did a nice job sort of maximizing his microphone time as well. But he's a good dude. And it stands to reason that he could have done a lot of damage if he had found the right weight class several fights ago. I said on the broadcast, I don't know if you picked it up, he wrestled 1 year at the University of Tennessee Chattanooga at 174 pounds.
Wow.
And then, of course, in the UFC, he was a lightweight up until Saturday night and finally found the division in which many of us believe he belongs. So we congratulate Groovy Lando Venata. Jacare Souza is pretty tough, man. Certainly tougher human being than I am. He gets his arm snapped by Andre Muniz and just sort of acts like it's a fucking hangnail. what'd you think of that whole situation?
You know what I take away from that? Did you see when they went to the replay and the one judge? He goes like this. He covered his eyes. Now,
he was doing that during Venato Grundy, too.
Yeah, right. We don't know if he did that. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if he's been doing that.
Yeah, right.
While the fights are going on, but at least this time he had a good reason. That was.
I think maybe he did it in round 2 of the Adaujo Chookagian fight. Oh, I'll just go Caitlin. I'll just score for Caitlin. I can't watch.
Oh, man. You're horrible. You're a horrible person.
Yeah, I'm going to hell. So Jordan Wright is a fascinating fighter for me. Who's the other guy who is Jordan Levitt? These Jordans, man. Spider Monkey Jordan Levitt and the Beverly Hills Ninja Jordan Wright by TKO over Jamie Pickett at 104 of round 1. So Jordan Wright has a 100% finishing rate. I think they're all in the first round. I mean, he touches these guys, they go to dust. Like, what is going on with Jordan Wright? If you don't know, lifelong martial artist, coachable, married to the game, coached by Anthony Hardonk and Vladimir Matyushenko and Fabio Leopoldo. And it seems like all of these resources are devoted to him. But when he wins and he gets you hurt, it happens quickly, and he is very destructive. What do you think about the future for Jordan Wright?
He's got the aggression. He's got the killer instinct. I think he needs a little more technique. You can see
polish.
A little raw, but at these early fights that they give him, he's going to get away with that. But if he doesn't tighten up a couple of things, the better quality guys are probably – it's not going to look like that. So yeah. I hope he's squared away when the time comes. But for right now, what an entertaining, enjoyable fighter.
Yeah.
He's just going balls to the wall from the second that bell rings.
And I know Andrea KGB Lee did not get the $75,000 bonus she had hoped for, but a great triangle arm bar to get Antonina Shevchenko out of there with 8 seconds to go in round two. That was a must win for Andrea Lee. I mean, maybe she would have retained her roster spot, but in terms of any sort of flyweight contention and those aspirations, absolutely had to have it, gets a finish. And for the older Shevchenko sister, obviously this is a setback in terms of her contention. And real quick, first fight of the night, I don't know if you saw it, but Sean Soriano, good friend of mine out of Rhode Island, coming back to the UFC for the first time since 2015, nearly knocked out Christos Yagos. Instead, he succumbs to the submission. And dude, I've never seen, you knew Soriano after 6 years away, he wasn't going to tap, but I've never seen that much snot come out of a human being after he got choked unconscious.
You guys must be having a ball at that broadcast booth.
Well, I love it all. See, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I love the, I'm not going to say I like love the bodily fluids. I guess I just said it. But like, I'm all for the blood. Like, I am all for the blood. I don't turn away when I see limbs snap. It's hard for me to watch the Weidman leg thing, but I turn away.
That's rough. All the leg breaks to me, I don't care who it is, especially Weidman. I just, like, sometimes I'm laying in bed at night and I think of that and I got to, like, shake my head.
Well, yes. So the Weidman thing is I have a little visual post-traumatic stress. When he stepped backwards.
Yeah.
That part of it is just, is so raw in my mind. Seems like he's doing great though. What an inspiration.
No, I talked to him the other day. He sounded way better for the first time.
That's good. All right. So it is Monday, May 17th. Happy 69th birthday to my mother. Wouldn't that be something, by the way, if Ken Flo and Conor McGregor both had baby boys on my mom's 69th birthday? We congratulate Conor on the birth of his son, Ryan, I believe, Ryan McGregor.
Wow, congratulations. Awesome.
I bet that kid's savings account's going to be fucking awesome. Ryan, congratulations. Welcome to Ireland. You don't have to work a day in your life if you so choose. Hunter Anik, incidentally, you're going to be digging ditches. Like your father. Yeah, working Hunter at the golf course like your dad. Hunter's, all right.
Hunter's getting a hammer and a box of nails just to get him ready.
Well, I remember when I worked as an electrician's assistant for my late stepfather, Doug Zwit. And my first day on the job, we arrive at a Dunkin' Donuts on the Cape, and he hands me a shovel and he says, I need a 3-foot ditch around the entire building. You know, we'll break for lunch in 3 hours. And I said, here we go. You know, here's we go. You better
learn
how to be a broadcast journalist or you're going to be doing some manual labor.
I am a huge believer that everybody needs those jobs. You need those jobs that you, when you get a little older, you go, I never want to go back there again. I'll do anything. And I think that's a huge thing in growing up and really defining your character and helping you grow is that you got to grind it out while you're young. I mean, I did all sorts of things. I broke my fucking ass, but I look back now and go, man, I would never do that again. I don't ever want to do that again, man. I think it's crazy.
You know? See, I would never work in the restaurant industry again. That was something that certainly a lot of hard work. And I don't want to sling plates anymore. I guess for me though, and certainly for my twin brother, we kind of gravitate towards some of that manual labor. I'm not talented enough to work in construction. I think as a welder, that field would probably chew me up and spit me out pretty quickly. But I enjoy like doing golf court maintenance. I enjoy doing landscaping. You know, I enjoyed the physical component, the workout component to those jobs. So I could see at some point in my life, you know, doing something physical again, just maybe one or two days a week. I'm not landscaping 5 days.
Yeah, that landscape. I mean, look, especially with that. Yeah, right. That could be, you could decompress in your own garden.
Well, like, I could do dishes all day. That's what, like, I enjoy doing dishes, right?
Wow.
It's like, honey, do you want to play with the babies or do you want to do the dishes, right? I'd like to do the dishes, honey, unless you want me to play with the babies, in which case I will happily go do childcare. People hate when you say like you're babysitting your kids or doing childcare. It's like, come on, you're parenting. It's your kid.
Yeah,
fucking childcare. Okay.
And the hardest job in the world, I'm telling you, is parenting kids, to me anyway. It's tough.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Motherhood, a little bit harder than fatherhood, at least according to what I read.
Now listen, I'll tell you, there's no question in this household. That's a true statement. Because I basically am kind of useless.
Yeah. Cody Merrill worked construction in the summers in New Hampshire from 2008 to 2014. Now he's our producer, and we are going to get to the pronunciation of the week right now. So Cody's 1-5 on the pronunciation of the week. So looking for a W.
Wow, here. Cody. Come on, Cody. Pull it together.
Hi, Cody. What's up, Cody? Oh,
come on, Ray. I mean, I can't be taking this from you, too. From everybody else.
Holy crap.
So I got to meet this man in Houston, and Cody has done so much for this show. And I've said he and our listeners, of course, are the lifeblood of this program. But were Cody to get a lucrative offer from one of these production companies or marketing companies, we'd be in real trouble, right? And I don't know if he would just completely give the 2 weeks notice and kill us like that. But we appreciate everything you've done. I was able to sort of thank you in person. But I don't know if you're 6'3".
I never said I was 6'3". That's a narrative that you're playing, just like the fake Caitlin Chikagi and tap. Like, I don't want to hear it.
I agree. That was not a tap.
You definitely didn't tap, for sure.
No, that was absurd.
I mean, I got to jump in there and defend a little bit. That 100% didn't happen.
But, Cody, thank you for all your contributions to this fine program. All the details on the video side, it's not lost on us. We appreciate you, kid.
Well, of course. Like you said, lifeblood of the fans. We do this for the fans. That's why we don't get paid. Moving on to the pronunciation of the week.
Well,
John,
let me set it up for you, Cody. This man competes on the prelims this weekend in the UFC's lightweight division. He fights Rafael Alves, who you may recall is coming off the historically worst weight miss in UFC history. He weighed 157 and a hook for a featherweight fight.
Wow.
Cody Merrill, of whom am I speaking this week?
So I think my issue here with the pronunciation of the week is I'm saying it too fluidly, and I'm just going to copy how I think he would say it, because I think that'll serve me a little better. Because I would maybe say it differently. Damir Ismagulov.
Let's hear him say it.
Damir Ismagulov.
Yeah, it's a hit right there.
All right, that's good.
It's good enough for me.
But I feel like if I said it quicker, I would say Damir Ismagulov, like as you would say in your combo package. But I don't know if Kenny would have given it to me, but you know, his son.
I ordered that last week at a Russian restaurant. I swear to God, I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to.
I ordered the man like a bunch of goulash.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
That was gabagool. You were at your local gabagool. Italian.
I'll have the Damir Ismagulov tonight, please.
Wow.
Let me try the Yan Xiaonan too. All right. Cody Merrow, 2-5. After a hit on the pronunciation.
You'll have to show me where I got to come out sometime. All these restrictions lifting. I heard your Long Island's going to be open soon. So I'll have to make my way out there to your Russian spot.
I'll let you know. We're going out with, Marab's been trying to take us out for about 3 weeks now. But of course, there's one person who's never available. Mr. Crazy Pants himself, Matt Serra.
But isn't that amazing, though, that come 12:30 Eastern last week, he was locked in, ready to go, clicked on the StreamYard link. I'm just saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I think for him, it was like, oh, it's their 300th episode. I better fucking show up, you know? And he showed up in whatever condition.
Well, that's what we do, John, whatever condition. And well, that's shout out to John Anik for doing the turn and burn for this podcast. And we very much appreciate it as an audience, my friend. So
Thank you, buddy. Hey, by the way, Pat Miletich, if you're listening, you win again. The masks have been lifted in Nevada. Did you see that?
Oh, wow. No, good news.
So joining the likes of Florida and Texas. Show up in Houston, it's like, oh, COVID-19 is over down here, man. It's just over in Texas. All right.
Texas was a good environment.
Well, certainly, yes. Certainly.
Did they quarantine you at all? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a little bit inconvenient. The Friday night quarantine. We had a rapid test on Wednesday, but yeah, two or three more COVID tests, and it is what it is. Happy to be working, right? Happy to be working. You know, people don't like a lot of complaining. And that's the thing, too. A lot of fans are saying, oh, you know, people complain about the scoring without solutions. It's like, well, you're not listening to the Anik and Florian podcast if you think we are short on solutions, right? I mean, I've been proposed with myriad solutions over the years. We've talked about half points, but if you think that we wield any power in this situation, but
that's right. Who do we talk to? I mean, I think that's part of the problem. The fact that they can make a statement like that, they don't understand the severity of the problem. You can't.
I mean,
nobody to talk to.
Let me read the language for a 10-10 round. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to do it. So let me just say to the audience here on the 10-10 round, it exists in case of an incomplete round. That's really why it exists. So that in the case of an incomplete round where you had to score a 10-10, they have that option. A 10-10 round at MMA is a necessity to have for the judge's possible score, mainly due to scoring incomplete rounds. It is possible to have a round where both fighters engage for 5 minutes, and at the end of the time period, the output, impact, effectiveness, and overall competition between the two fighters is exactly the same, possible but highly unlikely. But again, it's very much discouraged. All right, enough about that. So what do you got going on this weekend? This week?
Man, I'm leaving Wednesday for the Mohegan Sun. I have Aviv Ghazali fighting at Bellator. Nice. Like I've talked about him before. He's a great kid. I think he just turned 20. He's undefeated. The sky's the limit for this kid. He's got a lot of time to grow. And I think, he's getting good fights that are allowing him to grow. So we'll see how it goes this weekend. But he's right now he's on a roll, man, and he's a sweetheart. He's a great kid, and he had a great camp, and I'm expecting a great fight from him.
Well, that sounds great. We'll drive safely, my man, and we will reconvene next Monday in all likelihood. Next Monday, we may do some sort of live Q&A type show, just me, you, and Kenny, actually, because there is not a UFC live event on Memorial Day weekend. So we might have a special episode next week, but we'll follow up with details. The only requirement for you, we're all shaving our heads before it. I don't know if that's a deal breaker or not, but we'll talk about that off the air.
Oh, yeah.
It's a joke. You don't have to do that.
That's not looking
Kenny good. Literally wouldn't. I could offer him one Bitcoin. I could offer him one Bitcoin right now, probably valued at $48,000, and he wouldn't.
I thought that was funny with Cody lining you and Matt up and me and Kenny up last week.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, it's great. I don't give a shit. I'm not bald, right? It's like, I don't, people, it's like, I have no sensitivity to it. Like, I don't
know. No, if there was sensitivity to it, I wouldn't even bust your balls on it. That's not the, just thought it was funny.
Of course.
It wasn't to make anybody feel bad. I think Sarah's probably got his hair too.
Well, I know like Daniel Cormier and I can grow hair, but I did a post on Instagram yesterday and I wrote at the end of it, if you want us to grow out our hair, we will not do it. And fans are like, yeah. Because you can't. And it's like, bitch. Stupid fuck, bitch.
Take it easy. Right, listen, it was great chatting with you. I'm going back.
I love that phrase, by the way.
Wow. Say it louder. The people couldn't hear you.
Stupid. Not complaining. All right. Hey, I appreciate you stepping into Ken Flo's shoes today.
Yeah.
And, next week we'll have extended time as well, and I wish you all the best at Mohegan Sun, and we'll talk to you in less than 7 days, my brother.
We'll be in touch. All right, guys, take it easy.
All right, that is it for the extended Ray Longo Minute today. Let's get to some selections for UFC Fight Night. Font versus Garbrandt. Wall to Wall on ESPN Plus coming up this Saturday, May 22nd at the UFC Apex. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fight. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, Team Florian not here, of course, to celebrate, but Kenny wins the week 3-2, shaves the overall lead down to 13, 62-49. Key fight for the winning week, Beneil Dariush over Tony Ferguson. And we welcome in the Duck, Ian Parker, on social media at Ian Parker MMA. It's good to see you, my man. So Cody's going to step in and offer some quick picks here for Ken Flo, but I think Kenny probably would like to reserve the right to change these. So be on the lookout maybe for some content later in the week. So how do you feel about Cody stepping in here against you today, Ian? You feel okay about this?
I think Kenny needs all the help he can get. So why not someone like Cody who was just at the events, fresh and ready to go?
You know, it was interesting. We were talking about it earlier, how Cody watched that Mike Grundy Lando Venata fight live. And then because of all the discourse about the scorecards, went and watched it at home. And he saw it for Venata at home, but maybe for Grundy live.
Yeah. You know what? This whole judging thing, we keep talking about it. All it's going to do is keep ruining guys' careers. Look, Lando won that fight. 30-27 either way was ridiculous. You know, it's just, at what point does anybody step in and just be like, yo, these guys just can't do it anymore? Or the scoring system has to be fine tuned. I mean, I know everyone was talking, I don't want to go off top of the Oliveira Michael Chandler round one being a 10-8. I don't really understand that one either. You know, I thought, you know, I mean, they were basing that on the last 45 seconds of the fight, which, because it almost ended, but that's not the way to do it, man.
I would just suggest that 95% of people who don't understand why those 10-8s were given out have not gone online to read the scoring. So that's part of the issue too. So I do encourage our viewers and our listeners to take the time to go to the ABC website, to print that out, to read it. And I know we read a lot of that for you today. But again, there are a lot of us that are trying our best to interpret this based upon that. Cody, what were you saying real quick off the air about like a judge and how you think maybe there could be some value in having like credentialed lawyers in these seats? What were you saying off the air about that?
So when I did this exercise, and I texted Ian when I was in the crowd, and I was like, I have no idea how they scored it that way. What I found to be the best way to score the fight was to take the criteria and read it after every round, or before every round, I guess. And then what I did was I wrote an email to John and I wrote, this is why I had it this way, because the way the scoring lists out is hierarchical in that if A, then B, if not A, then C.
Right, correct.
And so there was a lot of clauses I felt like I had to use in a legal perspective that were saying, because of this specific language, this is why in ABC example. And so that's why I feel like there is a lot to be said for the credentials of some of these judges. Like my word really doesn't carry much weight, so I can say whatever I want. I'm not going to bash on judges, but like,
I will.
Who's to say that some of these people are actually as smart as they're giving the opportunity to be, you know? So, yeah. And a lot of the times, how many times, you know, I have elderly grandparents and I wouldn't trust them behind a wheel, but they have to go get retested. So like if the state says that they can drive a car,
right,
then like they can drive a car, but like, are people going back to these people and be like, Sal D'Amato, you've been doing this for 15 years. Like, what is your updated credentials? Like, did you even look at the unified score in 2017? I don't know. So a little long-winded, but that was my perspective. I disagreed with Ray. I don't know how you could have a 10-9 for Venata in the first round of that fight. That was just where when seeing it live, I told John, I said, I don't know how anyone could score the first two rounds for Venata. The second round is where I switched my opinion at home.
The problem is too, is you're leaving this up to a lot of opinion of a few people that we don't know how much they're paying attention at all times watching the fight. I mean, John, you even said, I think it was either this week or last week, you guys are supposed to be looking at your monitor, but how many times you get caught looking up at the actual fight, which may present a different angle, whatever it is. You know, for me, it's, you have guys that also have been doing this a long time from boxing, you know, not necessarily from MMA, with a strong MMA background, understand the grappling. You know, when you talk about, you know, especially like the Chukagian, Vivian.
That's really fight, not true. That's
which part?
The boxing judges.
All right. So even if that's not completely, even if that's way too generalized, you know, some of these people aren't also as familiar in the grappling exchanges. Like to give Chukagian round number two, you know, that's a problem also. But that changes. This is the one sport where this is one of two sports with combat that can change someone's career based off someone's opinion, as opposed to other sports where the rules are, you know, it's a little bit tighter, a lot tighter.
Right. It's so much different than a strike zone, right?
Yeah. Sean was saying, and he is sort of an expert on this, you know, Judge is a noun and a verb, right? And again, just pointing people back to the language, right? It's like, oh, that's ridiculous. It's like, well, we're just trying to go based upon the language. All right, we got three picks for you today. This one up first, a little bit interesting. It's a fight that Kenny and Ian picked last week. Middleweights Jack Hermanson, minus 175. Edmund Shahbazyan, plus 135. Odds courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Ian, seems as though there was a COVID circumstance on the Hermanson side. We don't know necessarily if that was coach or fighter. I don't think it was him. If it were me, I would not be factoring this into my handicap. Who did you pick on the show last week, and ultimately are you staying with that selection?
I took Jack Hermanson. I'm staying with him. To your point, I'm not factoring in COVID whatsoever. You know, I think his style is more mirrored of the way Derek Brunson will fought Edmund Shahbazyan, and I think we saw that's a path to least resistance, and that's where I stand by that as well.
And if I'm not mistaken, Ken Flo was on the other side, Edmund Shahbazyan, so we'll keep his pick intact from last week, and he will reserve the right to change that. All right, co-main event could very well produce the next title challenger for the UFC strawweight title. Yan Xiaonan, minus 167 versus Carla Esparza, plus 135. We'll need the round, the method of victory, all that stuff. So Yan Xiaonan is already a huge deal in China. Dean Amesinger said when she walked into the UFC PI, it was like royalty walked in there. 12-fight unbeaten streak. She's won six in a row without a loss since 2010. She did not fight in 2011 through 14. So fun to watch on the feet. Here she draws Carla Esparza, who has won four in a row, to move within striking distance of another title shot in all likelihood. Ian, I love this fight. Question is, who do you have, Yan Xiaonan or Carla Esparza?
I like Xiaonan here. I just think that she's going to be too strong of an athlete for Carla. I think she'll keep the fight standing. As much as Carla's striking has definitely improved and her entries on her takedowns have been a little bit less telegraphic, I do think that Xiaonan is just a way more complete fighter. I think she's also big for this weight class. I think there's a different level of strength that we're seeing. She also knows how to use her range really well. If she keeps Esparza at a distance and forces her to shoot really far out, she's just going to catch her coming in every time. And I think Xiaonan's a star in the making, not just where she's from, but here as well. I'm really excited for this one to see if she's got what it takes against a top contender in Esparza. So I like Xiaonan here by decision.
Good analysis. I like the matchup. Cody Esparza, pretty remarkable. Last win, split decision over Marina Rodriguez. Also beat Michelle Watterson, Alexa Grasso, and Vina Jandjidova during this streak. I mean, that is an impressive wins list. Hell of a career overall. She's got the head-to-head win over Thug Rose Namajunas, and that is an important layer because were Esparza to get through this Yan Xiaonan challenge, she might be next for Rose. I think that's a fight that would really appeal to Rose Namajunas. What do you think, Cody? Co-main event, Xiaonan, Esparza, who wins? How do they get it done on behalf of Team Florian?
Well, if I'm an odds maker, I don't know how Yan Xiaonan isn't a minus 200, minus 250 favorite, but picking here on behalf of Team Florian, I think I have to go with Carla Esparza, the cookie monster. We both have a victory over Vina Jandjidova. So I think I have to go with Esparza because of the deficit here. Right. But Kenny's probably going to say Xiaonan by decision. That's what I'm going to bet. But
Cody's taking Carla by knockout in the first round.
Yeah. Do you have a round and a method of victory for us? I love the way. See, this is the way it should be done. When you're trailing, you have to find. I know it's only May, right? But you have to find opportunities. I'm not saying this fight is the right one per se, but like when there's a plus 460 underdog, like Kenflo's got to start taking some flyers on those and you can be sure he's not listening back. So, all right. So how is Carla Esparza winning this fight? Cody Merrill.
By decision.
All right. All right. Main event.
This fight, though, but that's fine.
She wins by knockout in the first round.
I don't think that.
Yeah, Ian, we're going to have you lead the main event just because Flo's not here. And I'm going to do this entire prediction in a Boston accent out of respect for Rob Font. So some of the listeners really like this. Some of them do not. Kind of like the mustache. All right, Rob Font out of New England, more specifically Leominster, Massachusetts. Actually fights out of Woburn, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully Bruce Buffer or Joe Martinez won't fuck that up for everybody this weekend. Rob Font, minus 121. Cody, no love, Garbrandt, the even money underdog, will need the round, the method of victory. So Font, Ian, on the brink of his first UFC title shot, stopped Marlon Moraes last year, December 19th, third straight win. On the other side, Cody, no love, needed a win last June at UFC 250, and man, did he get it. I'm being told Rafael Assunção is actually still unconscious That vicious knockout was all the way back in June of 2020, but it did position Garbrandt, of course, for this main event title eliminator against Rob Font. Ian Parker, who wins the main event on ESPN Plus, and how do they get it done?
I don't even know if I want to attempt that accent, Rob Font, but
not bad.
It sounded almost like Borat. Somehow I almost went that way. That was weird. My apologies to all the Bostonians out there. But yeah, you know what? With Cody's knockout over a Sun Tzu, here's my thing. He threw that punch. He wound up from the hip. That does not work on a striker like Rob Font, who will jab you 25 times before you could even throw that. I mean, that was like a video game power punch where you literally hold onto the button and release it, and he lets go of all of his power. Doesn't take away from the knockout, and a Sun Tzu is extremely tough. But I just think Rob Font is at a point in his career where everything's finally coming together. This is the guy we've been waiting for. You know, he's with a good team. And I'm not just saying that because they're friends of the show. I think his striking is one of the best in the division. We saw it against Marlon Moraes. And his takedown defense has gotten way better. You know, Cody is a good wrestler, but he doesn't use it. He's just super confident in his boxing. But as we've seen, you know, when he gets into these brawls, he usually loses. And I just think that Font is the smarter fighter. I think he's going to come a little bit more prepared. Not that I don't like Cody. I've been a fan of Cody for a long time, but I think Rob Font wins this by decision.
Cody Merrow, not Cody Garbrandt, is like a member of the New England cartel. So, Cody, we know you're probably going Rob Font. The question is, how's he get it done?
Rob Font is going to win this fight by decision, but for the purposes of the show, Cody Garbrandt's going to win by decision. He needs the points. I don't.
Right.
Kenny won't do it, so I got to do it for him. And if he doesn't go, I can change.
If Kenny wants to throw me some Bitcoin, he can, and he could buy points back. That'd be interesting.
How about that?
Well, I've seen some intel via Aljamain Sterling's Instagram that they're spending time with the cartel. So I got to roll with Rob Font, but not for the show.
And one thing on the Boston accent, and there are a lot of actors who do it well, a lot of them who don't do it particularly well, but with the letter R. So yes. If it's in the middle of a word, you basically kill it, right? Just have it, right? It's fucking have it. But if it's at the end of the word, like car, you don't say car. You say car. And people are confused on that. You know, it's like park the car and have a jad. It's not park the car. It's park the car and fucking have a jad. And that's enough on that. Ian, when's the next PFL broadcast, kid?
June 10th. Yeah, June we 10th. Had a little bit of have a nice little break, ESPN Plus and ESPN 2, then Thursday and Thursday after that, and then a month off, and then back to back to back. And then, we'll be back.
How about it? At one of these times, it's going to be Longo, Parker, and Florian all at site on a PFL event soon.
Yep.
So
I think
Lord help the production staff.
Screen together, he's not going to know what to do with himself. Like,
maybe
this
Cody
kid's
will. Here. Maybe maybe Cody will go in there and produce some content. All right, you can see Ian on the PFL broadcast June 10th. No show next week, at least in terms of predictions, buddy, with no UFC live event Memorial Day weekend. But we will talk to you in advance of that June 5th show. And big one, of course, on the 12th with UFC 263. Yeah. Thank you, bro.
You got it, guys.
All right, there's the duck at Ian Parker MMA. And that should just about do it for today. I don't believe that Ken Flo is a father of two just yet, but he has gone dark on me. So that's a wrap on episode 301. Cody, thanks for your contributions. Do you have any parting shot before we get out of here? Seems like you do.
Something about May babies. You know, my birthday is on Saturday. Kenny's a May baby. So something about Taurus men.
And happy
for that, I'm Cody Merrill. This is John Anik.
That's good. Happy birthday to my mom, born May 17th, 1952. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to all the listeners and viewers who came up to me, took pictures at the arena and at the host hotel. And so many of you were talking about the Anik and Florian podcast, which really warms my heart because it really is my way to give back to all of you fine people. So I appreciate that. If you want merchandise like the Felder and Anik shirt I'm wearing or the Anik Florian podcast hat I'm wearing, AnikFlorianPodcast.com. There is a promo code on the website. And we'll be back next week. Stay tuned on social media for details on a Q&A portion to next week's program that will allow you to join us live on StreamYard. You can also ask questions on Twitter as well. This has been a Cody Merrow production for Ray Longo and Ian Parker. John Anik saying so long for now. Everybody have a great week. Even you, Patty Miletich. You'll live.
Previously on the Anik and Florian podcast.
very, very hard fight to cap here. You know, we don't know which Edmund Shahbazyan we're going to get after that last loss. He's been out for a while. You know, and, you know, obviously we saw him controlled by Derek against the cage. Jack might present a lot of problems. You know, if Jack's smart, he bull rushes him, puts him against the cage, and brings him down real quick. I'm hoping Shahbazyan is working on that, but I just can't rely on that knockout power getting done so quick. Jack's experience, he's fought the best of the best. You know, when you get your first loss, it's so hard to judge how these young guys come back so quickly. So I have to think that the fight IQ of Hermansson gets it done. I think Kenny might be licking his chops here at a value plan, Shahbazyan striking. So maybe, but again, too, is in Kenny's blood. I'm going to go with Jack here.
Probably the first seven, is it 8 minutes, is going to be most dangerous for him. That's where Shahbazyan can really take advantage. I'm going to take that bet. I'm actually going to go with Shahbazyan here. But as you guys said, I mean, not a whole lot of people go out there and finish Hermansson. Hermansson has a chin from hell, but I'm going to take that gamble because I need some motherfucking points.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.